what our comrade Alarcón said, there is another example. In Cuba, we have 130,000 patients with Alzheimer's, and there is a medicine produced by Pfizer laboratories that is not allowed to be sold to Cuba. So it is another example. If the blockade is lifted today, we will go for this kind of medicines. Remember that in Cuba, 18% of the Cuban population is more than 60 years old. We are an aging population, and in 15 years, we will be the most older country in Latin America in 15 years. We will have 1 million inhabitants less in 15 years. So we need many other services and many other medicines and equipments in order to guarantee the quality life for our aging population, because our life expectancy, thanks to the revolution and thanks to the public policies that we have, is today it is 78, and we are going to achieve a higher one in the future, in the near future. Women live 79 or 80, and men 78. It means that we have that priority also, and it is going to be very important for us. Another question regarding internet. Public information in our official web pages said that 25% of the Cuban people have internet connection. But the main internet connection in Cuba is for social institutions, for a social use. It means that, yes, in Cuba, individuals could have, and in fact, many individuals have, mainly through cellular phones that we are developing that right now. We have more cellular phones, about 3 million cellular phones in Cuba, and connected phones are 1.2 million. Los teléfonos fijos, you know, 1.2, and cellular phones, more than 3 million in Cuba. It means that, yes, it is part of the political willingness of the Cuban government to develop the new technologies and to develop those technologies even with the blockade, because the blockade, the US blockade, is the main obstacle for our technological development in Cuba. Remember that Cuba has no access directly to internet. It is connected through Canada, and it is very expensive for the Cuban government to develop facilities in order to have more internet access for all. But there is one aspect of our policy. It is, in my view, it is a principle. The market is not going to say who has internet in Cuba. We are going to decide, we are going to continue deciding to put internet connection for those sectors that are going to contribute in a better way to the Cuban national social economic development. It is the policy that Cuba has decided, because believe me, and it is clear that yes, we would like to have more internet access for every person in Cuba, but the priority is to have a social connection in many places in the country, and it is one of the things that we have improved a lot in the recent years in Cuba. Another thing is we are not against internet connection at all. We are not against that. We consider that it is a resource for the development of the country. And that is true that in the US, there is a policy of regime change against Cuba, where the US aid agency, USAID in my Spanish, USAID, US aid agency, and other agencies are paying as an average $20 million a year to pay those programs in order to, what they say it is, to empower the independent civil society in Cuba in order to allow their voices to express. But the problem is that why don't they allow all the Cuban people to be connected? Why do they select those people that are under their order in order to do what the regime change programs want them to do in Cuba, and they give the priority to those people? Why? Why don't they allow us, the Cuban people, the Cuban institutions, to decide on that? So that's a problem that I tell you frankly that we have in that regard. I don't know, Mede, is that the thing you said?
May I
yes, another something. Thing?
No, on this, I think this this issue of access to internet and access to new technology and so on, the situation is rather funny because it has been used as an argument to criticize the Cuban regime, but let's go to the facts. If you read the Helms-Burton Act, they devoted a specific section to make it sure that no American technology, nothing related to internet access and so on and so forth, is permitted. President Obama recognized that that was part of the policy and announced one of the changes that he announced is precisely to permit now, theoretically, to permit access by Cuba to those technologies. The same government that was criticizing us for denying that access to our people had to recognize at the end that the denial was by the U.S. to the entire population of Cuba and the, and to the Cuban government and so on. That's a fact. We have, of course, that social approach that Kenya explained, and we believe that, that if it is a universal right, access and so on, well, it is also for the poor, for the person that for the unemployed, for the person that doesn't have the same opportunities than others in the, in a capitalist society. But in our case, we are trying to develop that and to use that for the benefit of the entire population and not just a privileged minority.
Thank you, Larcón. Another thing has to do with can Cubans speak up freely against the government policies? Why not? Is it is possible to build other socialist parties in they support, if they support the revolution? Is it allowed? Is there more than one political party? I think it's similar questions.
Let's go with those.
Yeah. Well, remember that in Cuba, we have the Communist Party of Cuba. We are a model in the political system of Cuba. The Communist Party of Cuba is the leading force of the state. But remember also that that party do not nominate candidates for elections. So we are not in the presence of a electoral party. In the Cuban model of participation in our democratic process, in Cuba, we do not assign to the Communist Party of Cuba the role to nominate candidates, the role to elect who will be member of the parliament, who will be the leaders at the local levels and so on. It is a difference that I consider is important to recognize. Another thing is that remember, probably you know that Jose Martí, when Jose Martí projected the Cuban nation, he always said that there should be a revolutionary party of the unity, for the unity of the Cuban people. So the unity of our people is expressed in having one party that represents the voices of the diverse sectors and persons and individuals of the Cuban nation. It is another concept that it is part of our political decision why to have one party. Another thing is if it is possible to criticize the government. Yes, it is possible, of course. It is guaranteed the freedom of speech. Alarcón was saying things now that is the examples that we always say. Why are you going to allow a person to speak out, but when you pay those people to express those opinions? In our views, some people that are called dissidents by the US, they are, sorry. What happened? They are really mercenaries because these people is paid to be organized in Cuba. And also the internet connections are very powerful. They have, for instance, one blogger in Cuba that was visited by Roberta Jacobson. She has a blog that is automatically translated into 10 languages. That blog is in Cuba, but it is supported by the US and the USAID especially, and the tool that created that blog was paid to a German enterprise, a private German enterprise was paid by the USAID in order to tailor a software in order to make function that blog for a simple blogger in Cuba. Is that person a dissident, or is that person a mercenary just publishing the opinions that the US government wants them to say? So it is a difference. And of course, we respect other countries' political models. We respect that. But I remember when we have the Cuban Five in the US in the year 2005, many activists in favor of their freedom had to pay $50,000 for one announcement in the New York Times. So are we talking about the freedom of speech or not? Is the freedom of speech a good, a merchandise? Yes, in some countries it is, because if it is the right to express what you want, you should be free to publish that in the New York Times or wherever you decide to do that. So it is interesting. Another aspect that we should not forget is that Cuba has been under the US blockade for more than 53 years now. That blockade is not only the many restrictions for our economic development, it is also the financial persecution, but it is also a war. It is a silent war against Cuba. Wherever you want to say what Cuba is, why aren't you allowed to come freely to Cuba?
Right.
Why? Because many people in the US, I feel that today there are less, but there are people still today in the US that they don't want you to see Cuba by yourself. So it is something that I just suggest to continue wondering why they don't want the common people of the US to come to this a country and to see the Cuban reality and to make your decisions about Cuba and your own opinion. That's things that I just tell you, and I just mentioned as the analysis on this regard. It is true that in Cuba, so the political parties, I think I already explained, and against the government policies, well, I was going to mention one data. When we started the process of the updating of the Cuban economic model, it was in the year 2010, because the National Congress of our party was held in the year 2011. Imagine that we started with 270 guidelines to be discussed openly, right? About 8 million Cubans participated, and we changed 68% of the content of the guidelines. At the end, in April 2011, we approved 313 guidelines that are the base of the updating process in Cuba. In my view, it is a good example of the participation and the level of dissension that we have in Cuba, because we publish in the media, it is a pamphlet that it is possible not available now because we sold millions of copies of that and our friends translated into many languages. How was at the beginning of the debate? How many Cuban citizens expressed their opinion? How it is now, the guidelines? So it is a very transparent process, and it has to do with socialism. It is not only about, oh, if you like to have this economy or this one. No. It is about the Cuban life in general. And imagine millions of Cubans participating on that. And we did change things, and we did improve many things that probably the main draft didn't include at the beginning. Another question. It has to do with, has Cuba taken steps to develop relations with the Syriza in Greece? Yes, we have very good relations with many, 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 many political forces and movements in the world. The solidarity movement with Cuba is present in 152 countries of the world. We have more than 2,035 associations in solidarity with Cuba. It is in many countries, and it is one of the things that allows us to say that we are not alone, that we have many friends, including these people in Greek, in Greece. Costa Rica has a military.
Has no military.
Why does Cuba? Well, Costa Rica is Costa Rica, Cuba is Cuba. But in a way, I think I answered this question because Cuba has had a confrontation with the US government. It is not in our imagination, it is real. Remember back in 1961, the Bay of Pigs invasion? We defeated them in 68 hours, remember that also. And we know that aggression was not the US people, it was a manipulation of mercenaries in order to defeat the very young Cuban Revolution. Remember, we triumphed in 1959, and then in 1961, it was the aggression through the Bay of Pigs. But of course, we have to defend ourselves. But our military strategy is not offensive, it's defensive. We are ready, but the best way to guarantee to succeed in war is to keep peace. It is also our philosophy in our strategy. And of course, we should be ready because the possibility of an aggression is there. But we believe, and I feel like Alarcón said at the very beginning, we are in a new moment. And we have to do everything that is in our hands in order to really keep this moment and to keep peace. It is possible for the Cuban people and also for the US people, both. We need it. How do you deal with prostitution that has come with the tourist industry? Well, yes, in a way the tourist industry has accompanied this kind of phenomena. But in Cuba, our law and the debate that we have in parliament is in order to strengthen the law that punish the persons that make profits from prostitution. I'm talking.
Pimp es una palabra correcta en inglés.
Pimp. Sí, no es una mala palabra, ¿no? For instance, we punish the pimps and people that is making profits out of prostitution, because, yeah, in our analysis, I respect the others' analysis, but in our analysis, we have the social and the economic conditions for the human beings to have the basic things. These things are guaranteed for everyone. And many people, and some people in Cuba, mainly young people, young female, they go to prostitution as the strategy to have more commodities, you know, to have consumerism and so on. We also do a very important preventive work in order to demonstrate that it is not necessary to prostitute yourself in order to have a better life quality. But in the case of our laws, we emphasize in that aspect because we consider that, yes, the tourist industry is part of the stimulation to that. So we do not allow the mothers to bring their children in touristic areas where they are just providing the possibility of the children also to be involved in sex abuse or things like that. We are very strong with our policies. At the beginning of the revolution, we have 100,000 prostitutes in Cuba. So it was at the beginning of the revolution that phenomena almost disappeared during the years, but then with the special period with the tourist industry, it has been again present in our lives, and we are working very hard in order to deal with that phenomena. And how do you do policing here? Are police armed? Are guns legal for people? Well, our police is armed, but we have a very, very clear code of ethics for the Cuban police men and women. And they are very preventive also. Our police in Cuba, remember in the year 1994, when it was a huge migratory wave to the US, that thousands of people came down the Malecon area and Fidel came to the place to see what happened. That day, Fidel personally asked his bodyguards not to bring weapons with them. So I remember now that moment when I read this question, because it is to tell you that in our a strategy to deal with crimes and with the problems of the people, it is not through guns or weapons. It is through persuasive means and also through education, because you cannot re-educate. You should educate, because when a person is in a prison, when a person is committing crimes, it is a result of the lack of the society to be able to include everyone in the model of society that we became. So it is our what is Medea? Acá, aquí. Will you be able to protect political refugees like Asata Shakur with the opening of the U.S. relations? Of course, Cuba has the right to exercise the protection of those persecuted by political reasons. And it has been said very clearly by the Cuban government in many occasions so far. And there is another interesting question by the end. It is, would Cuba allow any of its citizens or visitors to organize a formal protest against the activities in the Guantanamo detention facility? Well, with the Cuban Peace Movement, we have an NGO, it is called Cuban Movement for Peace and Sovereignty, and every 2 years they organize a seminar in Guantanamo, a seminar for peace and against military bases. And we will find out about the date and all the details. So if you are interested, Medea and the team here, the crew, you will be invited. But we don't have the exact details right now. But yes, we organize different activities. And we want Guantanamo to be returned to the Cuban sovereignty through legal means, through the international law, that they have not any right to continue there, not. And even less for this criminal and very awful methods of torture that they are applying in Guantanamo.
Yo quiero invitarlos a
Alarcón.